they're going into these working level talks with a very high demand. Their opening position is very maximalist.
For North Korea, more leverage ahead of possible talks. It's Thursday, September 19th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly in Washington. Join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, fighting in Myanmar leaves young women vulnerable to trafficking, young people demand action on climate change, and how a no-deal Brexit will affect developing economies. It's all on today's VOA Asia. North Korea has promised to resume nuclear talks with the United States soon. If it does, it could be entering the negotiations with an improved bargaining position. The talks would follow a summer of missile tests and a perception that the U.S. alliance structure in Northeast Asia has begun to weaken. North Korea's foreign ministry expounded on the offer of talks this week by saying a discussion of denuclearization may be possible following the removal of unspecified threats and hurdles endangering our system and obstructing our development. The statement suggests Pyongyang intends to seek both security guarantees and sanctions relief from the United States. VOA's Connie Kim spoke to an analyst via Skype about why North Korea might make such a statement ahead of the potential working-level talks. Mark Fitzpatrick is the former executive director of IISS Americas.
They're going into these working-level talks with a very high demand. Their opening position is very maximalist. Now, this is often the case in negotiations, but it's more maximalist than had been the case earlier in the year at Hanoi.
Nuclear talks broke down after a February summit in Hanoi between U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un ended abruptly without a deal. Trump rejected Kim's offer to partially dismantle his nuclear program in exchange for a significant relaxation in sanctions. Mark Fitzpatrick questions whether North Korea will make a new offer at any upcoming talks.
Turning working-level talks into another so-called party planning exercise to prepare for the next summit is probably North Korea's real reason for wanting to sit down again. They don't like working-level talks to discuss substantive issues. I don't have a high optimism about these upcoming working-level talks, but I certainly think it's important to pursue every opportunity.
In recent months, North Korea has also emphasized it wants security guarantees from the United States, a possible acknowledgement that Trump may be unwilling or unable to relax sanctions at this stage of the negotiations. In order to remove U.S. sanctions, Trump would need the support of the U.N. Security Council. To completely remove U.S. sanctions, he would need the approval of Congress. North Korea has repeatedly stated it has no intention of unilaterally giving up its nuclear weapons without U.S. concessions. At times, North Korean officials have called for the U.S. to remove any nuclear threat, not only from the Korean Peninsula, but also the wider region. VOA's Connie Kim asked Gary Seymour what the possible threats and hurdles North Korea is referring to as obstacles to agreeing to denuclearization. Seymour is the senior executive director of the Crown Center for Middle East Studies and professor of the practice in politics at Brandeis University.
It's the alliance, it's U.S. military forces in the region, including forces stationed in South Korea, as well as U.S. naval and air forces in the region. So from North Korea's standpoint, all of that would have to be removed.
President Trump has said several times over the past year he has no plans to withdraw U.S. troops from South Korea. But Trump has given little indication of what he is prepared to offer North Korea. And now to Sydney, where the first Chinese-born woman to sit in the lower house of Australia's federal parliament is under a sustained attack for failing to disclose her membership in organizations linked to China's Communist Party. Phil Mercer reports.
There are claims Gladys Liu had connections with senior figures in Beijing's covert political propaganda apparatus, which have raised questions about her eligibility to sit in the Australian Parliament. The lawmaker has admitted being a member of the China Overseas Exchange Association between 2003 and 2015, which at the time was part of China's powerful State Council, the Chinese government's central political and administrative body. The Hong Kong-born politician says her membership was entirely innocent and has denied any conflict of interest. She said she's a proud Australian. Australia's centre-right Prime Minister Scott Morrison said Liu is the victim of a smear campaign with a grubby undertone. The political assault is led by the opposition Labour Party. It's demanded to know if the government had received warnings about her from Australia's intelligence agencies. Ministers have declined to comment. Labour Party leader Anthony Albanese denies the scrutiny of Liu is based on race and says he wants to get to the truth.
What the motivation is here is to ensure that there is accountability for people's actions. It has nothing to do with race, and the only person who has raised race in these issues are, of course, Prime Minister Morrison.
Gladys Liu is a former speech pathologist who became an Australian citizen in 1992. Her parliamentary career has collided with growing anxiety in Australia over allegations of Chinese meddling in its domestic politics and cyber espionage. A task force is to investigate foreign interference in Australia's universities because of fears over China's growing influence on campuses. These are sensitive issues, given Australia's reliance on China for its recent prosperity. China is Australia's biggest trading partner. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. Hong Kong cancels China's National Day fireworks amid protests. South Korea removes Japan from its fast-track trade partners list. The Philippines has a new plan to fight some of Asia's worst corruption, but analysts wonder if it will work. India's government approves a ban on e-cigarettes, and Pakistan rules out talks with India over Kashmir. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Ongoing economic hardship has led many young Burmese women to seek work in China, but they can become vulnerable to human trafficking and forced marriages. Steve Sanford spoke with local activists and former victims.
Here in northern Myanmar's Kachin State, thousands of displaced family members with no jobs cross regularly into China, hoping to earn money. Largely because of China's one-child policy that ended in 2015, there are more men than women in China, driving a demand for women and girls from neighboring countries to wed and bear children. Often, the most vulnerable are tricked. This woman, who wants to remain anonymous, says she was promised a job by a friend, but was later drugged and held captive in China.
I've suffered and lived in terrible conditions. They were abusing me with sexual violence. I don't want to sleep with them, but they force me. And I begged them to let me go, but he didn't listen and he raped me until I became pregnant.
While some of the cases are clearly criminal, there are also transactions that start out as arranged marriages with promises of generous dowries. The Kachin Women's Association, a rights group, say some parents have good intentions but are unaware of the repercussions of arranged marriages that go sour.
I think many of the parents want their daughter to marry with a Chinese man because they think they will have a better life in China. They thought the Chinese government would take care of the Chinese citizens very well.
Sang Ra's job as a corn picker in China ended after the government tightened up border security. With the sudden loss of income, an arranged marriage of her 16-year-old daughter with a wealthy groom sounded good.
My daughter was still young, and I didn't want her to get married at first. But the Chinese family said they'll take care of her. My relatives agreed that she'd have a better life, so I made the decision for my daughter to marry the Chinese man.
2 years later, after not being allowed to move freely or communicate, the daughter was permitted to return home for a visit, but stayed for good.
My friends keep asking me how it was to marry and live in China. Was it fun? Was I happy? I told them, it's not fun. I'm very sad and disappointed to have gotten married.
As new fighting between the government and Kachin rebels has put peace negotiations and the region's stability on hold, observers say that trafficking crimes are expected to increase. Steve Sanford for VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, Malaysia's Air Force has been carrying out missions to disperse chemicals into the air in an attempt to bring rain down from the clouds after haze conditions worsened on Wednesday. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. Tomorrow, young people around the world will press government to take action on climate change. The event is called Fridays for Future. It comes as a new survey finds that 57% of teenagers say they fear climate change. Kathleen Strzok narrates this report.
This is what democracy looks like.
Fridays for Future protests bring together young activists, known as strikers, demanding action on climate change.
The older generation, especially in America, is not acknowledging the issue as an issue that it is. And that itself is very detrimental to this movement because it's preventing children from gaining the momentum they need.
Kokar and others have been galvanized by 16-year-old Greta Thunberg from Sweden, who started a movement called Fridays for Future last year to raise awareness internationally about climate change. Sweden supports the movement.
We are aiming to be the first fossil-free country in the world.
Fridays for Future activists demonstrate on Fridays, calling on governments to enact climate change policies.
I think that older generations have really not understood the urgency of the issue, in part because things like fossil fuel companies and our government did so much to cover it up and so much to distract from the crisis that was going on, that until now we haven't really realized the severity of the situation.
According to the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC, in 12 years, damage to the planet from climate change will be irreversible.
I will be 30 years old by then, and I want to live past 30, and I want to be able to have children. I want to be able to have a successful future, and without a livable planet, that's not possible.
I think a lot of power is in the hands of the older generation still. And I think by, let's say, breaking that power cell down and passing the strength down to the youth will be much more, I think that would be the best solution to move these things forward as they are.
As Fridays for Future demonstrations continue around the world, the movement and Greta Thunberg have been awarded Amnesty International's top honor. For Sahar Majid, Kathleen Strzok, VOA News, Washington.
Coming up, two innovations that will take you on some wild rides. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello anytime you're online or on your smartphone. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime.
Now this news. U.S. lawmakers will move next week to begin passing legislation combating human rights abuses in Hong Kong. The action is intended to send long-term support to democracy activists there. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. And VOA Asia continues. If Britain crashes out of the European Union without a deal, Bangladesh, Cambodia, Japan, and Australia are among the many countries that could feel the shock waves. Henry Ridgewell reports on how global trading routes and supply chains might feel the impact of a no-deal Brexit.
Brexit will affect not only Britain's relations with the European Union, but also with hundreds of other countries with which Britain currently trades on EU terms. London has negotiated new post-Brexit trade arrangements with several countries, including Central American nations, Switzerland, and South Korea, among others. But that leaves hundreds of states, from smaller economies to relative giants like Japan and Canada, with whom trade would revert to World Trade Organization terms after a no-deal Brexit. And striking new trade deals won't be easy.
Many countries with whom we try and do trade deals will say to us, yep, that would be great. We'd quite like to know what your relationship with the European Union is going to be before we sign anything with you, though. So all roads lead to Brussels.
Such uncertainty doesn't help countries that sell goods to Britain. Kenya exports cut flowers, fruit and vegetables, with total exports to Britain estimated at $400 million per year. Bangladesh exports almost $4 billion worth of goods to Britain, currently traded under the EU's preferential rules of origin, which allocate zero or low tariffs on goods from developing countries. A no-deal Brexit will likely mean disruption.
The problem is that will erode the preferences that some of these countries receive. So, for example, the advantage that a country such as Bangladesh and Cambodia have on certain products, because they have access with a lower tariff, that would be removed.
Speaking last month, the head of the Africa Development Bank warned that the combination of a no-deal Brexit and the US-China trade war were hitting African economies.
The industrial capacity has fallen significantly, and so the demand, even for products and raw materials for Africa, will only fall even further. So the effect of that could have a ripple effect on African economies as the demand for their products weaken from China.
Britain, meanwhile, is stepping up its search for new trade deals, with ministers visiting New Zealand, Australia and Japan this week. Many of these nations' companies have huge investments in Britain and fear the chaotic fallout of a no-deal Brexit. Overall, for smaller economies, the impact is likely to be less severe.
African countries seem to be quite more relaxed, or developing countries more relaxed, except some specific countries that trade a lot with the UK about the prospect of a no deal. And this is because, well, the UK has lost over many years the sort of importance as a destination of exports for many of these countries.
A no-deal Brexit would hit the economies of many EU states like Ireland, Germany and the Netherlands. But analysts say it is in Britain where the impact will inevitably be felt hardest of all. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
This news break from VOA Asia. The 2019 Rugby World Cup will begin on September 20th in Japan's Kyushu Island. Three matches will be held involving France, Ireland, and Italy. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, a hospital connected to Stanford University in California is offering some patients a new virtual reality experience. The new technology allows patients and their families to travel inside a human heart before surgery. Deanna Mitchell takes a look.
Bo, I, and his 12-year-old son, Orion, know almost everything about the human heart. Orion was born with a congenital heart defect and is about to undergo his fourth open heart surgery.
My son has a heart, who's born with a heart defect. We knew prenatally about it through a series of tests.
Today, however, is the first day the father and son are going to see the heart in virtual reality.
All right.
Thanks to a new virtual reality experience called the Stanford Virtual Heart, created by cardiologists at Stanford and Lighthouse Inc., a VR company, which allows users to explore a computer-generated heart that shows defects in 360 degrees while wearing a VR headset. Dr. David Axelrod has been treating Orion since birth. He's also the lead medical advisor for the Stanford Virtual Heart. He said the project was originally created for medical students, but he says it's also beneficial in helping some children and their families better understand complicated procedures.
You can grab the different heart pieces. You can kind of look at it, and it's moving and beating, and you can kind of see how the blood goes around, too.
It was pretty amazing, actually, to be able to look, especially the inside of the heart. It really allowed me to visualize, like, all the stuff that Orion's been through.
For children and their families facing cardiac surgery, the Stanford Virtual Heart can bring better understanding and maybe even some comfort.
Yeah.
Deanna Mitchell for VOA News, Palo Alto, California.
A Parisian startup is trying to ease traffic congestion by creating, wait for it, a flying water taxi. The idea is that it will float above the River Seine. VOA's Aresh Arabasadi takes us to the future.
This ship-like contraption in Paris looks like an escape pod straight out of a spy movie as it floats above the city's historic river.
When the boat is flying, you have between 30 and 40% less drag. It's a future.
Called The Bubble, it is the creation of Parisian startup Sea Bubbles. Co-founder Elaine Thibault says they designed the craft to be eco-friendly.
You have batteries in the bubble, two electric engines, wings in the water, and with the speed, the wings lift the boat, you reduce the drag.
Bubbles, the flying, sailing water taxi, costs about 200,000 euros and travels as fast as 18 knots.
In France, the focus is on the taxi version, one pilot, four passengers. And we need to use waterways, because with our bubble, no waves, no noise, no pollution.
The company plans to launch in Paris, but local police recently clipped their wings.
Welcome to France.
The Bolt says local regulations may sink the project.
We are waiting for the authorization to have a commercial line between east and west to cross Paris every morning. We will wait 6 months, but have a look. There is absolutely nobody on the river.
If blocked in France, the company could test friendlier waters in the U.S. or Switzerland. Paris is among the world's busiest urban transportation networks, choked with motor vehicles and trains. The City Council of Paris aims to drastically reduce carbon emissions by 2030. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. You can find us at voanews.com and let us hear from you. Write to us on VOA Asia Facebook or send us an email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks especially to PSU Radio Patani FM 107.25 at Prince of Songkla University in Thailand. And CCU Radio at National Chung-Cheng University in Taipei, Taiwan. Thanks to Tracy Carter, our director, our engineer Nelson Lopes, managing editor Diane Gao, and the VOA Asia team, Jim Stevenson, Ira Melman, and Keith Lane. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly in Washington. Enjoy your day.